Welcome to the Juicer Podcast, a podcast that interviews students at CS Arts, USC, and beyond. Your host, Arjun Lakshman, will talk to students about their major, conservatory, extracurricular activities, musicals that they have been in, music that they've produced, personal lives, and much, much more. And with that, I hope you enjoy today's episode. Welcome back to another episode of the Juicer Podcast, where we blend talent and creativity. Today, I continue on my journey for interviewing my good senior friends, and I now venture into the territory of acting and stage management with the iconic duo Devin Harris and Henry Parker Elder.
Hey.
Hello.
Hi. What an intro.
Hi. How was the trip?
The spring break?
The spring break trip. How was it?
It was sort of wonderful.
It was really fun. Yeah, we went to Vegas and gambled our tuition away.
This is true. Henry and I spent some late nights at the blackjack table. Semi-successfully, I'd say. Maybe not super successfully, but enough to have a good time for sure.
Yeah. How was yours?
It was good. I spent a lot of time with family. I went down to Carlsbad to visit my grandparents, which is always fun. And my grandparents live super close by now. They used to live in Tennessee, but I would say about a couple months ago, they moved into Pasadena. So we don't have to keep flying them out, or not flying them out. We don't have to keep flying out to Tennessee. And also, Tennessee is not the best place. Sorry, not sorry.
Real.
Yikes. I don't know. I'm a big Tennessee fan. So now I'm actually kind of upset by that.
Oof. I mean, it's not a bad place, but you know, just the people there are.
It's certainly, long and flat.
Yeah. Yeah.
From a map perspective.
Topographically.
Yeah. Sorry. I see the world in terms of how it would appear in a third grade classroom.
So you only see Tennessee as like just this long.
It's just a long bar. It's like, it's the frying pan for Kentucky. Mm-hmm. That's all I've got. You're the only 10 I see is the other thing that I have.
Oh, of course.
I've heard of Nashville and that's it. And that is it.
Yeah. My grandparents on my mother's side lived in Knoxville, but my grandparents on my dad's side, no, wait, mom's lived in Nashville. Dad's lived in Knoxville. There we go. Can't remember my own family. Great.
It's the joy of family.
Yes. Man. The joy of family. They do have good pancakes though.
That's good.
Ooh.
Tennessean pancake?
Tennessean pancakes. Yeah, they're good. I don't know. Any sort of Southern food. I mean, Tennessee is definitely the place to go.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, a Popeyes in California is not going to hit the same as it will in Tennessee. It's just not.
No, even a Popeyes in Tennessee is better than a Popeyes anywhere else.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I agree with that. So a little bit of background on those who don't know. The three of us collaborated about a year.
Yeah, we did.
Wow. This April, it will be almost a year since we collaborated.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow. So we were all, the three of us, we were in The Importance of Being Earnest. Henry was Ernest. I was Mr. Chasuble, Reverend Chasuble, and Devin Stage Manage.
Yeah. What a great project.
That was such a fun project to do.
A whirlwind of craziness, but like so, like the end product just like blew my mind.
Absolutely. And it was the first time I've ever spoken in like a proper, I guess, proper English language that wasn't Shakespeare, if that makes any sense.
Yeah,
100%.
Like high,
high level type things.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
and it was also fun putting on like a British accent as well.
Of course.
Yeah. I just like my favorite thing about Ernest as a show was instead of it being an ISP, like an independent student production, I always refer to it as an IISP or as an independent student production.
Mm-hmm.
Because it really was just our amazing director was like, I would like to do this show. And that's how it started. And then she just grabbed people and we had a talented team on stage and backstage. And we just like made a show. It was just like people making a show.
Yeah.
And it was wonderful.
Yeah. I was definitely most surprised at what you just said. Like, I remember just going to rehearsals on certain days and being like, wow, we still don't have a person playing like four characters, but we're here and we're still going to keep going. And then actually having like being in the Massman, looking at the set that we had built, put together
by hand by us,
was just, it was so incredible. And then, you know, Fernando doing the lights and seeing all of that come together in just a beautiful way. It was really astounding.
Just like, yeah, I don't know. I've been on a couple of student productions, and like the nice thing about it is like you get your hands dirty, you get to do it yourself. But usually doing it yourself, you run into so many issues, and like it's like part of the learning experience, but also part of the struggle. And with Ernest, like apart from just finding people to fill the roles, like the show itself came together so well and so easily, and like one of the least stressful things I've ever worked on, even though it was like teching and going up during finals week.
Yeah.
Crazy.
God, yeah. I remember I was learning the lines for Ernest on the treadmill. Like, I remember I would record all of Algernon's lines in any scene that we had, and just like say my lines while I was walking to like class or while I was running on the treadmill, stuff like that. And it was just like, wow, I have 4 days to get off book for this act. And I don't know if you remember that, Arjun, but it was just like absolutely insane.
It was definitely, well, I think I had it a little bit easier than you, just because Ernest talks and just does not stop talking.
Does not shut up.
He just doesn't shut up. Whereas the Reverend, I feel like he, if he really wanted to, he probably could just stay quiet the entire show if he really wanted to.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was a fun role to play, though, for sure. I think I just loved his, like, innocent nature, I guess you could say.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and just he's sneaky. He's a sneaky little guy.
Oh, he's very sneaky. He's very sneaky.
And he gets what he wants. Yeah. Man gets it done.
Yep. I just find it so funny that the year threes ended up doing it.
I know that, yeah. Like, they saw ours and they were like, we need to do that. We could do it too.
Yeah.
Like,
did you guys end up seeing it?
Did not.
I did, yeah. I saw it on their invited dress rehearsal. I went, and it was great. It was also very similar to ours in the sense that they had very minimal set design. It was surprisingly at a theater. I don't know. Do you know the Boston Court Theater in Pasadena?
Yeah, a little bit.
It's a theater that I had done my first directing gig at ever. I did Sweeney Todd at the Boston Court Theater. So it was really crazy being back there. But yeah, I thought it was great. My favorite was they had a full swing.
Wow.
Like a huge, like, kind of porch swing for the garden.
Wow.
And it was just really cool.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, I wouldn't expect, like, what am I trying to say? I figured that the MFA year threes would have, you know, not a big set, but like enough to make the set that they need, you know, compared to what we were given and what we had to do when the time came for it. But I'm happy for them. And I actually ended up running into the guy who played Chasuble before the show even began. He said, yeah, I came to you guys' production and I'm playing Chasuble, and I'm super excited. I'm like, wow, that's pretty cool.
Yes. They're really supportive. I love the MFA students. I meet more and more constantly, and they're really supportive. Definitely seek them out as much as you can and talk with them during your time here. Like, they, you know, as much as they seem separated by age, they are also students who are learning theater at USC, and also, I find, really just want to talk with, like, other undergrads. And, you know, that's why I think stuff like Much Ado was so helpful, because it blends these communities that otherwise would not interact as much, like the MFAs and the BAs.
Yeah, yeah. I also loved that performance, by the way. Much Ado was great. Did you guys end up seeing it?
I did not.
I also did not. It's been a busy semester, hard to catch shows.
Yeah. It's definitely been, I feel like, the semester where I've been able to see the least amount of shows.
Just, yeah.
But hoping that'll ramp up now that I have very little going on. Hopefully.
Not, yeah.
Knock on wood.
That booming out the door right there is the next production being like,
Yeah,
Henry.
literally.
Speaking of production, you both had a little production of your own
We
recently.
did. We just wrapped it up at the beginning of the month.
Yes, we did. The Lost Girl, her first chair. It was great. It was wonderful.
It was like a beautiful show
Yeah.
that like cannot shout out the entire company that made it happen because we were fighting against all odds, and to still be able to make a show that was so amazing, it's like a testament to the people who worked on it.
Yeah, it's very similar. It's funny you brought up Ernest, because it is very similar in my mind to something like Ernest, where it felt like, all right, we are the people who are going to like make it happen. We are going to pull up our sleeves, pull up our bootstraps, and we're going to get down on the
Make it
dirt and
happen.
we're going to build it, build it up from scratch. And we had a month to do it. From basically getting picked to do the show to having it
Opening night.
opening night, we battled tremendously with trying to find a venue, which I think every ISP
Currently
is
struggling
yeah,
with.
fighting right now. But I'm grateful that we did it. I, as a first-time director, learned infinite wisdom. I always think, classes can only teach you so much, and actually being in drenched in the actual world of, all right, let's make it happen is the best way to learn, definitely.
Do you plan on directing? I mean, that's kind of an obvious question, but are you thinking of directing all types? Like, do you not really have a specific genre? Like, you're cool with comedies, dramas, anything you can get your hands on?
All of it, yeah. When it comes to comedy or drama, I like to think, I revolutionary idea here. But I just think you can't have one piece that is definitively one or the other. And I usually think that the most fun approach to dramatic work is to find the comedy and emphasize it, or vice versa, take a dramatic work and really inject it with comedy. So that's why I think it's the same with Devin. I don't want to speak for you, but that we can just work on anything because everything is constantly.
Exciting and
Yeah,
just want to
exactly.
absorb it, yeah.
But yeah, definitely, I love directing. Definitely going to continue doing that. I tend to oscillate between the two, I find. I direct, and then after directing actors, I'm like, I can act. How hard can that be? Like, those actors, they don't know anything. And then I step in their place and I'm like, oh my God, this is crazy. I need to go back to directing. So I oscillate between the two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's a pretty good actor. I'll say
To be or not to be.
You didn't know he's pretty good, especially when he's talking about souls being as powerful as pussies in Dance Nation.
Yes,
Or
I love that.
muffins. Or muffins.
Lots of
You
muffins.
know, two equally powerful subject matters of importance. Yeah.
Importance of being earnest.
Importance of being
Oh.
earnest. Yeah. I also love to work on a variety of things, just like the excitement for each individual experience can be a brand new learning opportunity, but also just a different style of thing pulls you out of your grooves of like comfortability and routine and forces you to be like learning and thinking about it.
Yeah, you should never be comfortable. You should never be content. You should always be happy with the work that you've done, but you should always be okay, like, what's next? And not only what's next, but how can I do something different? I think that's why the show that we just did, Lost Girl, was so, helpful, is because it was so different to a lot of the work we've done before. Doing a one-act play, doing it outside. All of the issues that both of those entail, a short span of time. It's a very non-conventional show, and just, you know, the next show we do will also be very different. And I think it's very important to just constantly diversify your portfolio
experiences.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's like you just want to try new stuff, and it's like part of the reason for me is the excitement to try something new, where like even though I know I should say no to an opportunity, I'm already booked too thin, spread wide, and like someone is like, hey, we'd love for you to do this, like I would also love to do that. And it's the my own excitement that makes me continue to be excited, if that makes sense. Like it makes me more excited that I like automatically am excited and ready to jump into something, because it means I still have a passion for theater, and it like reminds me why I love to do this and why I want to be here, you know, making theater in a theater space. And yeah, I've learned that in my life a lot, that if you don't want to do something and you don't have the passion for it, like it's just going to fizzle out and not really work out. Mm-hmm. And so to like find myself in a passionate position and like be with other passionate people who like are putting in the work because they want to, not because it's what they have to do or whatever. It's like they're here for a want to do something, and it's wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you've already witnessed that, Arjun, but like it's the beauty of being in theater school is that like all these people have chosen exactly what you said, to pursue that passion. Sure, like there have been days where I'm like, oh my God, what am I doing? Like, you know, the passion is fizzling, but it always returns. And, you know, my advice to somebody like you would be talk to everyone on a project, you know, all the designers there, especially like from a director's standpoint, designers are the people who are like bringing in so much passion for the project apart from the actors. Mm-hmm. So make all those connections with those people, talk to everybody involved on a project, because, you know, obviously not everyone will be as excited to be working on a project as you might be, which is something, you know, we faced before, but definitely finding those people who are and just like vibrating with excitement with them is like the best feeling in the world. It's why, you know, it's why I do so much work with Devin. We just are two people who vibrate with excitement and passion when we're working on a project together, something we're excited about.
We vibrate.
We vibrate.
We vibe.
We're vibrators.
We vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was gonna ask, did you guys know each other before coming to college?
We did not.
We should have.
We really should have. Devin and I grew up 10, 15 minutes from each other.
And we like ran in like a Venn diagram of circles where there was a hefty overlap. And for some reason, we just never bumped into each other at like a multitude of points where we should have.
Mm. Yeah. Like Devin and I probably, when we got to college, knew upwards of 20, 25 mutuals. My cousins went to Devin's high school.
Like, I used to do improv with Henry's cousins.
Like it's just crazy stuff like that. And somehow we never met each other.
Thank God.
I know. Gosh. Whew.
This guy.
Were you guys assholes before you ended up meeting in college? Is that the vibe?
Yeah. Used to be a big asshole, try to still be a big asshole. I used to have slick back hair, I'm a real asshole.
Oh goodness.
Devin used to carry knives.
Yes. I was beweaponed.
Hmm.
Beweaponed.
Beweaponed. Yeah. And then we met, we happened to be in the same online class, and some of our other friends sort of threw us into the same living arrangement.
Yeah, serendipity threw us together, and we're very lucky for it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, a lot of Devin and I work incredibly well together. One of the things we like were thinking about talking about when we were like, oh, we gotta pick something to talk about in this podcast is like the power of friendship, the power of like an unspoken bond with somebody who you work so much with, how you don't even need to speak sometimes. And, you know, part of that could be, hey, both of us grew up in the valley. But I think it's just, you know, being together for so long. And
yeah.
Devin and I do improv together, obviously. We work on projects together. We sleep with each other. We're together a lot. So it's great. It's the beauty of college, the beauty of friendship, the power of friendship.
Power of friendship. Just sort of like you, minds of people who get along and hang out enough, like they just sort of start to fuse. And if there's enough of a connection that like you have the same sense of humor or the same like ideas about something, you just naturally find yourself arriving at the same conclusions. Which sometimes is like, we're working on a show and it's like, Henry's like, we should do this. I'm like, yes, correct. And other times it's us at dinner with a friend and we're doing a bit and we do the same like gag at the same time. And it's kind of embarrassing, but also it's like, oh, Henry.
Yeah.
Is that friend Nate?
Is that friend Nate? No, not this time. It was friend Asher. But friend Nate is very much in the picture and we love friend Nate.
Yeah.
And I'd like to state for the record that friend Nate is nothing more than friend Nate. There's no higher relationship like roommate or good friend Nate or like long time forever college friend Nate. It's just
friend Nate.
Even it's just friend Nate. Gotcha.
It's Nate, really.
Nate.
Nate? Oh.
Is that their name?
I think their name was Nate.
I don't know. I heard about it from someone that you guys knew of a guy named Nate. So I just thought I'd bring it up.
I might have known someone.
Maybe. Yeah.
I can't remember. No one notable. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
But dude, when you brought up the kind of trudging through, I don't know if that's the right word to use, but I'm just going to use it. Trudging through the terribleness that was trying to find a venue. I mean, like this semester especially has been so difficult for so many ISP companies. I don't know how you guys manage, because like that's a lot of stress and a lot of pressure.
Yeah,
it was tough. It was definitely tough. I would say it was probably the hardest problem that we faced, maybe
most complicated problem.
The most gargantuan problem because of exactly what you said. It really affected multiple things. The key is always, and you know, thankfully you have this, Arjun, Devin has this, I have this, it's approaching your work with a sense of optimism, you know, mm-hmm. saying that things will be okay, we can only control what we can. This project suffered because of my optimism a little bit too much. You know, I was a little too optimistic. Without actually getting stuff done that needed to get done. And so it is about, you know, it's about, you have to, especially in a director role and in a stage manager role, you have to just service the people around you. And as soon as you start doing them a disservice, you have to just stop and realize that you are. And my optimism took a little too long to realize that I was doing people a disservice, but at the end of the day, that is, you know, for me, it's what got me through the project, is just saying, it'll be okay. Like, we are going to make it happen. We're going to control what we can. We're going to, you know, all the designers are going to design without knowing where they're designing for. We're going to block the show without knowing where anything is going to go. It was a lot of question marks, but it's just taking it a day at a time, controlling what you can.
Yeah,
the support system was super important. Like knowing that you can't do it by yourself, and even like taking a problem on by yourself can,
For all you listening out there, the goddess, God, whatever they are, gave us light. We said, let there be light, and there was light.
It was Henry. Henry is our God. So shout out Henry. Anyway, it's like relying on your support system and knowing, like, you know, being able to put your ego aside and be like, I need help with this. I don't know what to do. Or like, this is something that we have to figure out and I need your brain for it. And like, that show took a lot of pivoting and a lot of trust on multiple parts. Like that blocking that we made for a space we didn't know. And then we knew the space and we tried to adjust it. And then we got there on the first day of tech and was like, oh, we're actually changing the seating arrangement and the stage is on an angle now. And there's like, the exits are different, you know, like it was just a big adjustment all of a sudden. And if Henry had been like, okay, let me figure out how I'm going to fix all this, he would have exploded and died and it would have looked bad because he would have been panicked. And if I had sat there and tried to do all the transitions by myself, I would, you know, it's just infinite amount of things that being able to know when to ask for help and use all the talented people around you. Like theater is, every theater show, both in performance and rehearsal, like takes a village. Like it need, like there are so many people whose hands need to be physically holding something for the show. And so you should just be able to use them all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was definitely the case with, I mean, I feel like the reason Fleeting and Crashing went so well last semester was because we just had a group of some of the best people that kind of put their minds together and just, you know, went with the process. Cause we did run into a couple of issues with a couple of people because I'm respectable. I'm not going to say their names, but you know, the rest of us, we just, you know, continued pushing through. And, you know, I'm still very proud of both of those projects. I'm still very proud of both.
They were beautiful. Right. They were beautiful works. Yeah.
Yeah, I think just, and I think being in a production that centers around, you know, a mental disability that I have, but not glorifying it. Like, it's not those typical plays that are so, you know, they don't, let me try to get my thoughts together.
Yeah, yeah.
My whole issue with a lot of plays that kind of center around neurodivergency is that they often show the worst sides of it and they never show the joy. And I'm sure I'm not the first neurodivergent person to say it. In fact, I know I'm not. But I think Andrew, who was the writer of this, shout out to Andrew. We love him. And also the director, Maya Gardner, amazing, amazing human being.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think the way that it shows both the good and bad of neurodivergency is just, it's human. Like, I could watch that play, and this is subjective, obviously, but I know that as someone who struggles with, you know, anxiety and ADHD, looking at that play and also acting in it, it just made me feel more comfortable with myself as a human being. And it was wonderful to be surrounded by people who were also like me in that sense.
Yeah. I mean, that's the power of theater. That's the beauty of what we do here, you know, is just to say, hey, so much of theater in my mind is, and I've talked about this in my directing class, is just simply, hey, I've lived this experience. I'm going to like throw it up in the air. Has anyone else seen this? Has anybody else thought about this? Has anybody else felt this? Or has anybody else been a part of this? And, you know, the beauty of something like that production is like people, so many people can attach themselves to this story, to these characters. And that's really the beauty of theater, is just saying like, here's an experience that I have lived. Here's an experience that we, you know, as a collective, as an ensemble have lived. And, you know, has anyone else lived that, or at least look at it? Observe it, you know. It's the beauty of theater. I love that, you know. It's what good theater is. And I love what you mentioned, this willingness to collaborate, you know, that is so important in a literal collaborative art. You know, it's the cornerstone of theater, of just saying, okay, we're gonna do it together. We don't have all the answers, but we're on this journey together. You know, it's the beauty of a production, I think. And anybody who like pretends to have all the answers or closes themselves off to collaboration, should rethink their choices in pursuing something like theater.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think in an amazing way, theater is like can be and should be a little selfish sometimes, where like I do theater because I love it and I want to tell a good story and I think it's really fun, but also like I'm going to get something from this experience. And it can be easy to forget that if you do a show you're not passionate about or you don't relate to, and like that's part of the process too. But then we both did a Laramie project
I
beginning of
was
this
just
year,
going to mention the Larry
summer,
Project.
and that was like, and I've done that show before. I did it in high school, and to do it again with like an older perspective and like being a little more comfortable in my queerness, and it was like I was reminded how affected I could be by a show and how much it was like nice and good for me to be a part of that show, not even on the stage, just like working on it, being a part of the conversations, being with the people, like feeling seen and like reminding why like theater is so powerful to audience member and the people who are happily up there doing it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I also want to talk about the Laramie Project because that was something that you guys started in the summer of 2023. And then later it came to the Massman in the fall.
I like got the like they reached out to me to work on it like in May, and then I think auditions were end of May, like so it was May to September. It was like a 4 month long process. Over the summer it was wild,
Yeah,
but
we had rehearsals on Zoom. So you know that was kind of a great a great solution to it, because all of us could be, you know, go back home over the summer, could be working jobs during the day, could be doing whatever that we needed to. And then our rehearsals were mostly character work. And then I think we had 3 weeks coming back before we had 1 week before school start, or 2 weeks before school start. We had some period of time before school started where all of us were together, and we started actually, like, that's when we started blocking the show itself. And by the third week, it was dresses. You know, we were ready to put the show up. So it was, you know, it was really a quick turnaround on that front. But the months of character work, the months of development that were put into it beforehand, made it so that the transition was actually really smooth and easy.
I mean, that show is one of my favorite ISPs I've seen at USC so far. The cast was stacked, not only because so many of them were my friends. I mean, obviously, you, Henry, amazing. Brooklyn, shout out Brooklyn, we love her. Ben Crane, he's been one of my best friends for this past year. I've gotten to know him really well. Ryan, he's a great guy as well. And obviously the director as well, Eli, awesome dude. Vanessa, great. Like, it's just a great cast in general, and it was just such a powerful play. I was living under a rock before the title even came, because like I thought it was an original by Eli. I'm not even gonna lie. I had no idea it was a pre I had no idea it was that famous.
It like that was another IISP where Eli just decided to put it on and gathered a great team of my friend Nate, and purely friend Nate is about to walk through this door. I'm gonna let him in.
Oh. Oh goodness.
I mean, it was just an IISP where it was literally, you know, Eli deciding to put it on, and our producer Zoe helping him do that. And, you know, the assistant director Ronnie, these wonderful creatives just came together. And it shocked, it's another one where, you know, shocked me at how incredible simply projects driven by people who really want to make them
Passionate
happen
people.
can be. You know, just pure passion can really take you far.
It like passionate team, passionate cast for sure. Like that is a beast of a show, and to engage in such a long commitment and deal with like, oh my God, the rehearsal schedule that's constantly changing because people like they're living their summer lives, and we weren't trying to, you know, co make them compromise that. But like why I thought it worked so well was because of the way that Eli and Ronnie were able to make our situation with summer rehearsals into like a quick turnaround into a show fit with how they made the rehearsal process go, where like Laramie as a show requires a shit ton of, sorry for cursing,
It's explicit, you can curse.
a shit ton of character work and table work, and every person played six,
Anywhere
five,
from six to I think 10
10 character, like
characters.
all of this stuff. And so that character work just like developed and developed for like that 2 month period of pure rehearsal. So then it was like magical. The first day we had blocking, and we sat down and we blocked maybe all of Act One,
Almost,
almost all of Act
yeah,
One in the
if
first
not.
in 4 hours with breaks,
Yeah.
equity. And it just like it flowed, and people were able to take blocking and give like character opinions and know it so well, and like low key we're mostly off book already because we've been working it, and it served itself so well that we were able to skip the sort of bullshit that happens at the beginning of like, oh, it's our first day of blocking. Like, right. Like, no, it's our first day of blocking, but this is rehearsal number, you know what, 33. Like, we're in this. And it came together really well.
Yeah, and shortly after that, Devin, you stage managed Fun Home. Is that correct?
That is correct. I went, the earnest tech week was during Fun Home auditions, and there was a time where I was sending emails to so many people, trying to double stage manage, which was tough for 2 seconds. And then Fun Home, which was magical and wonderful. And my heart is in musicals. It was my second musical I'd ever stage managed, and I was so happy to do it. And yeah, that was a joy of a process because I love that show, and the cast was so wonderful, and the crew and the people and the show and the audience and the experience. Yes, it was great. Another great learning opportunity, of course.
Yeah, I mean, talking about evolution and always taking on new projects and diversifying, the tasks and stuff that you were doing. That was, I believe, Devin, correct me if I'm wrong, that was Devin's craziest show when it comes to calling the show itself. One of the roles of the stage manager of calling every cue. I would love if you would talk about that, because I mean, that was just looking at Devin and watching Devin piece together the book was it was intense.
Yeah, certainly a beast of a show, technically speaking. When I first assembled, like we had paper tech, and I had first assembled my prompt book, there were about 500 light cues and about 100 sound cues maybe, and then there were a good like 80 projection cues, as well as like scenic. And because of the complex nature of the transitions, we were using the Massman, R.I.P. Massman had a cue light in the hallway. It's just like there's another cue to call every single time to have the person do it so it'll happen on time. And so it was certainly a beast, and I remember opening the spreadsheets for the first time and being like, wow, I not only is this stressful to look at and crazy, but like I'm gonna have to spend like multiple many hours like putting this into my book and making sure it's correct. And so luckily for the show, it gets trimmed down during tech, thank God. Our like it was a pain in the moment to be like, I have to put 500 sticky notes in my book for just the lights, but it was honestly more inspiring to know that our lighting designer had 500 different ideas to do, each one motivated and to affect the show.
And the end product was incredibly
And it
beautiful.
was
It was
amazing.
amazing.
I mean, like calling the show is my favorite part of stage managing ever. It's so much fun and it's very important, and it is satisfying to do it correctly, because it just like I know that I am making everything else work so that the show can happen as it's supposed to and the audience can enjoy it and see it. And when it's that hard and that complicated, and you know, I have two breaks the entire show to drink my water and wet my mouth in between calling cues, like, it's just, it was so satisfying when I started to like get it right. And I was like, proud of that. Like, can't pick a mistake out for myself. And compared to where I used to be calling shows, like being late on stuff and like not having things be as perfect as my perfectionist brain can sometimes make them, like, it was a growth moment. And yeah, like, you could just see a result. And now I've talked about that. Henry, are you happy?
I am content. Thank you.
I mean, I love Fun Home. I forgot how dark it was until I actually saw it. And it's a dark show, but I mean, it was done, obviously it was done so well by everyone. Obviously I can't talk about Fun Home without shouting out my bestie, Anton Peter. Yeah. That man is so talented, and I'm so grateful to spend every day with class time with him and just see him, you know, do his magic. This, the beauty of being in a cohort, it has its faults. That is a blessing and a curse, seeing him every day and also seeing everyone else every day. But they're also like, seeing everyone every day can get tiring. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love, you guys have a great cohort. Just while, like, hearing about how inspired you guys are, and I don't know, it makes me I feel very comfortable leaving, knowing that the people who are continuing on, the passing of the torch, are really gonna turn it into a really bright program. Obviously, Devin and I are not in the BFA program, but it is, you know, just to hear about how connected everyone is really rewarding. And I would say just always keep expanding, you know, always keep expanding the people you're talking to, the networks you're building, you know, talk to everyone in your year in the theater school. And then once you're done with that, talk to everyone in the film school and talk to, you know, never stop building that network. You know, it's something that we still are doing to this day. I mean, it's the beauty of why, what we do.
Meet a new person, you share an interest in a passion in art. Hey, what's your Instagram? Yeah. Let's make art together someday.
Yeah. No question is stronger than what are you working on right now? Mm. You know, everyone loves to talk about what they're doing, and also just great to connect with people. Oh, I've heard of that show, or, you know, oh, what's that about?
When
Tell
can
me
I
about
come
that.
See?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What about you, Arjun? What are you working on right now?
Assassins. Well, Assassins, yeah, that's number one. And ever since I've joined DFTC, we're working on and Butterfly, that will be I'm hoping that can be considered our magnum opus. I feel like that will be DFTC's magnum opus for years to come.
That's exciting.
Yeah. We're doing a stage reading this semester, but next year we're bringing it to the spring, and it is going to be, yes, it's going to be difficult because it's such a complicated play to do, but
oh,
I have
God,
full belief in everyone involved in the project, including myself. Yes. I mean, I've never been EDIA for a production before, and already I've been talking with Maya, because I know that she was EDIA for an ISP company at some point. I can't remember which one it was, but, you know, just learning from different people on how to operate, how to make sure that the environments that we're in is a safe one, making sure that everyone's voices are heard, and if a specific play, you know, covers a specific culture, it's important to, like, if you're not part of that culture, step back and listen. So for the sake of And Butterfly, I mean, yes, I am Asian, but not Chinese. So I really want to let those who are in DFTC, because we do have a large Asian population, which is great, and just, you know, let them speak their opinions on it, because they know more about it than I ever will. And I can learn so many new things. It's great.
Yeah. I'm really excited to see the show. I mean, just looking at the people who are on the team, looking at, you know, how it's coming together, and just hearing about it. It's so exciting. Same with, you know, all the stage readings, all the productions, all the ISPs this semester are really, really exciting and appealing to me. I don't know why, but particularly this semester, ISPs have my attention a lot more than I would say main stage shows, other than, of course, Rent. So excited for that.
Oh, I'm very excited. I'm going to see it twice.
At least twice.
I'm seeing it way too many times, probably.
That is true. Henry will be sleeping in the bank. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that, like, ISPs were forced to be so badass this semester because of the situation, which was really bad, got a little better, is still kind of shitty, but the intention is there. And it's nice that we're getting such a wide range of beginning of the semester. We had shows in the Massman. We had like Farewell and Proper, like, you know, a couple last hurrahs. And then we had an awkward middle area where ISPs are forced to figure something out. And we've got some really creative results from it. And then it's so exciting that there's a show in the Stopgap at the end of the month. Like, that's like, we have seen the entire trajectory of the arc. And I think at least it's nice for my heart to know that the quality of theater being made is the same no matter what location it's in, because the location doesn't matter. And it makes me feel good. And for us as graduating people who are losing these really nice resources, to know that a passion for art can still make, you can make art out of sticks and a flashlight, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Still, I'm excited for the Stopgap. That's mainly,
yeah.
I just want to see what that she's like.
Something our wonderful friend Nate said, and I don't want to put words in their mouth, but I remember when the Massman said it was, when it was going bye-bye, you know, the biggest thing that everybody was worrying about even last semester was, holy shit, where do we have our shows for next semester? You know, all the ISPs were just like, what do we do? You know, how do we pick up these pieces that are left behind? What do we do? And Nate just said something so beautiful and so simple, which was just like, it doesn't matter. Like, yes, venue matters and it's good to have all the equipment that you could need. But at the end of the day, we don't do theater because it's in a nice theater, you know, or because it's in a space. We do it because we like to tell stories. And it's exactly what Devin just said, that passion exists in every stage reading. It exists in every backyard show. It exists in the cabaret space. It will exist in the band, you know, it exists in all these spaces. Yeah, I mean, this was something we said earlier, but I think it's such a beautiful idea too, is if everything is 100% in a production, it you won't grow or you won't learn anything from it. It's the same, you know, in directing, it's a principle that if you're given a show and you like it 100%, or you like everything about it, or you have no questions, then it is not the show for you to direct. You should not be doing that show. You should do the show that you don't like all of it, or that you have a lot of questions about, or somewhere where you can expand upon your creative understanding. And I think, you know, in a weird way, the lack of a venue this semester has really, really done that. And I think we'll continue to do that with the Stopgap, with, you know, solving the issues that every new space presents. You know, as much as it is terrifying and seemingly cataclysmic, it's also an opportunity for, you know, smart minds like yourself to come in and really reshape the way that we think about a space or utilize a space. So it brings a lot of joy to, I feel like Devin and I both, that not only the semester has gone so smoothly in that transition, but really it, for the future is going to continue to be that kind of oscillating smoothness.
Yeah, yeah. Now, usually this is the part of the interview where I ask, what's your favorite thing about USC? But you guys have covered all of the bases throughout this entire interview. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to change up the question.
Oh, new question.
I was not prepared for this.
What is your favorite type of dog? I can go
Henry,
first if you guys need time to think.
I'm ready.
Go ahead.
My personal favorite type of dog is a rat terrier, which sounds
You
bad.
freak.
Okay, hold on. My like childhood dog was a rat terrier, and he was so freaking cute. And honestly, I like most types of dogs. I love a dog with a big old like spot on its face because I think that's so crazy, and I love it. And my rat terrier had a spot, and he would never let a rat in the house.
Damn.
Aw, that's sweet.
Yeah. I mean, the sadist in me wants to say a pug, not because of how fucked up they are, but I think they're really adorable. But also, they are incredibly fucked up, health-wise, and from a humanist standpoint, just. We created that monstrosity. As much as I do love them, I'd say a corgi. I really love it's the English in me. I really love just a Welsh corgi are to me some of the cutest freaking little guys. They're really aggressive, which is unfortunate, but they're really really cute. I just love their faces. I just love dogs in general. I think so many are just like. I love you so much. They're so. I
It's
just
hard
want
not to love a
to.
dog.
Yeah, exactly. They're the best. My sister has a great, great dog that we don't even know what breed it is. We can't. We think it's a Carolina wolf dog, like a dingo type dog, but we've no idea. And she said the other night it. He, not it. He. His name is Buster. Arrested Development had his head on my sister's lap and his paw on my sister's partner, and it was just like, oh, like how can
Oh.
you not love dogs? They're the best. What about you, Arjun?
I will say right now, probably a German Shepherd. It's a pretty basic answer, but I did have two dogs when I was younger. Both of them were German Shepherds, and they were just the sweetest
Yeah.
dogs. They very much helped me be more relaxed. But I will say that the two Chihuahua slash Dachshund dogs that I have right now at home are also quite
Oh,
cute.
I gotta say, the
adorable.
cutest dog is always the dog that you have. That's just the truth. My dog is cuter than anyone else's dog, and your dog is cuter than anyone else's dog.
Yep, that is very fair.
How
That's very
works? My
fair.
dog's ugly as
Your
hell.
dog is pretty ugly.
Oh no. Wait, what type of
No,
dog do you have, Henry?
I have two beautiful,
They're
beautiful
ugly.
dogs.
Gorgeous.
I have an Australian Shepherd and a giant Alaskan Malamute.
Wow.
Yeah,
Big old
two really
guys.
crazy dogs, just literally infants. It feels like they
I
just scream and play all day.
feel
They're
bad
the
for people who are allergic to dogs, man. Like that's
My
awful.
dad was. Yeah, it's a hard. I mean, I slightly am. I have it more with cats, but at the end of the day, I feel like most people who have those allergies are just like, well, if I see a dog, I'm gonna pet it, like. I'm gonna just deal with the rash or deal with the, scratchy throat.
I'll just deal with the asphyxiation. It's fine. I don't need
Exactly.
to breathe.
Yeah, I agree though. It's some of the greatest things on this planet
Our dogs.
are animals that we have domesticated.
So cute and they love us.
Yeah.
I
How can
love
you
that.
not?
I love dog. I love
Yeah.
cat.
Well, I wanted to end it on a good note, and I feel like that's the perfect note to end on.
Yes.
Dogs. Dogs are amazing. And
Dogs are
so are both of
amazing.
you. Thank you guys so much for coming on and giving your wisdom.
Thank
Oh, thank you for
you.
having us.
We know nothing. Let the record
Yeah.
show. We know absolutely
No, you're not
nothing.
Jon Snow. You know things. See, that was
Yes,
a
we know
that
of things.
you know of things. You don't know nothing. You know of some things.
That's true.
Also,
True.
and I say this with all of the love in the world, this is probably the calmest episode I've done in a while. Like the past few ones have just been chaotic, and I love it. I have to say I love it, but this was like I felt like I was a little kid asking like my wise uncles for help. And I
Yeah,
loved it. I loved
I
every
wish I
second
could
of
be a real uncle and like hand you $100 under the
Yeah.
table.
You ever need a surrogate uncle? We're here. We'll buy you beer. We'll, I don't know
No, we
what uncles
won't.
do.
For legal
We'll,
reasons, no,
yeah,
we
no, we
won't.
won't. Sorry.
How about this? How about this? All I want is that, like, when I have a wedding, I just want you to dance crazy. That's all I want.
Done.
Yes,
We're
I will
there.
be blasted and dancing crazy at your wedding. You have my guarantee.
I can promise you that.
We'll be wearing matching suits.
Oh, you better wear matching suits.
Damn right.
All right, well,
Hi.
thank you all so much for listening. Take care and peace. The Juice of Podcast was created on May of 2020 by Arjun Lakshman, where he interviews students from CS Arts, USC, and beyond. He talks to these students about their extracurricular activities, musicals that they've been in, music that they've produced, their personal lives, and much, much, much more. The Juice of Podcast is brought to you by contribution from viewers and listeners like you. Thank you.